Hello and welcome to Voyage to the Wild, the podcast documenting my journey as I sail around the planet in search of extraordinary wildlife and the remarkable people working to protect it. My name is Charlie Young and I am a marine scientist and your host for this series. And together, we are going to venture off the beaten track to explore some of the wildest places on Earth. Coming up in this week's episode, Alexi and I navigate to wild waters of the River Gambie in search of incredible wildlife, including hippos. It was 6 a.m. Life in the mangroves was still sleeping. The sun hadn't yet peaked above the horizon, and everything around us was still and quiet. As we made our way through the winding tributaries of the mangrove forest where we'd been anchored for the last 2 weeks preparing for our voyage upriver, every now and again we would startle a sleeping heron, which, woken abruptly from sleep, would take flight with a flustered series of squawks. By the time we made it out of the forest, the sun was beginning to rise, silhouetting the skyline of the capital, Banjul, and the plumes of smoke pouring from container ships docked at port. Gladly heading in the opposite direction, we pointed ferrel due east and entered the flow of the main river. My interest in navigating to the upper reaches was first piqued when I read about a small island home to a primate rehab facility and over 100 chimpanzees. Nestled 220 kilometers inland and situated in the River Gambie National Park, I said to Alexi one day, "Wouldn't it be amazing if we could sail ferrel up there?" After some further investigation, we realized that the river should be deep enough, and so we began to plan our journey. Stretching for over 1,120 kilometers in length, the River Gambie extends the entire width of the Gambia. Fed at its mouth by the rich waters of the Atlantic Ocean, it snakes inland through vast swamplands, arid savanna and gallery forests, and over the border into Senegal. It's a monstrous snaking giant, with strong tides and fierce currents. Looking at the map and calculating the distance, we worked out it would take us at least 4 days to reach freshwater, which should begin some 185 kilometres inland. For the first few days, the river remained wide and expansive. Its extremities appeared as nothing more than dark smudges on either side of the hulls. Timing our ascent with the rising tide, we hitched a ride on the current, finding shelter off the main river and dropping anchor when it turned. Life settled into a cycle of motor, anchor, sleep, repeat. We spent our time on deck hiding under a fabric makeshift shelter, trying to keep out of the intense heat of the sun. Most days we were joined by squabbling groups of Caspian terns which followed us for hours, dive bombing into the water around us, catching the fish we disturbed. By the third day, the extremities of the river were beginning to close in. Dense mangroves lined the edges and the occasional baobab tree broke through the upper canopy, majestically standing tall like a giant dandelion amongst a wild lawn. In the evening, as the tide turned, we decided to make our way into a small stream to anchor. As we entered, before us we saw an even smaller stream leading off the main tributary. Alexi looked at me with excitement in his eyes. It was barely wider than ferrel and completely shrouded in a canopy of vegetation. A completely irresistible temptation for Alexi, who loves nothing more than pushing the boundaries in search of adventure. We drove past it, peering inside to get a good look. With only sight to go by, we guesstimated the height and agreed our mast should fit. Standing at the bow, I got ready to spot any submerged branches, whilst Alexi steered us in. The towering archway of vegetation loomed over us like a gaping mouth ready to swallow us whole. Entering, we were consumed in a maze of gnarled mangrove roots as high as deck. Passing just meters either side of them, I looked up to the top of the mast just in time as we clipped a branch. Twigs, leaves, and seeds as big as conkers came showering down on us. I looked at Alexi and he grinned, kindling for the fire, he said with a chuckle. As we navigated through the throat of the beast, an opening appeared at the other end. Reed beds swayed in a breeze on one side, mangroves towered on the other. Clearing the tunnel, we brought Feral to a stop in the middle of the clearing and hastily dropped anchor. Switching the engine off, our ears were instantly filled with the sunset chorus of the wild world around us. Gathering the fresh kindling from around deck, we made a fire and sat peacefully without speaking, soaking up the magic of the evening. Falling asleep to the shrill calls of rose-ringed parakeets roosting in the trees around us, we were awoken some hours later by the sound of snapping branches. Grabbing our head torches, we jumped out of the tent and saw Feral's backside wedged in the mangroves. Having tried to turn and align with the current, she had unfortunately got stuck. For a while, we wrestled to get her out, yo-yoing backwards and forwards with the engine in the tight stream, before eventually setting her free. We realized upon her release that staying anchored there would only mean she would get stuck again. So we decided to lift anchor and head back to the main river. Re-entering the tunnel of trees, the trunks now loomed like frozen ghosts around us. Scanning around with my head torch, I caught the distinctive blood-red eyeshine of a West African crocodile hidden amongst the mangroves. Less than 4 meters away from the boat, it watched stealthily as we glided past. I wondered how many others must be lurking amongst the roots around here. Probably hundreds. An excited chill ran down my spine. Making it back to the main river without any new kindling, we dropped anchor once again and resumed our attempt at sleeping. As soon as dawn broke, we set off. We passed the notorious Devil's Corner and cruised under the Senegambia Bridge with no issues. Now 185 kilometers upriver, we were finally entering freshwater country. And that meant only one thing. Hippos. Gambia is home to a small population of hippos who occupy the sweetwater realms of the country. But being here in the dry season meant there was a chance we might not see them. At this time of year, when the river waters are at their lowest, hippos spend a lot of their time hidden throughout the day in sheltered, secluded wallows. It's also the time of year where females have given birth and are caring for their young, choosing quieter spots off the main river to guard and look after them. Still, I was determined to give it a good try, and with breeding season just around the corner, there was a chance we might get lucky. Over the following days, I flew my drone at dawn and dusk and explored the surrounding savanna lands and creeks. Squinting at my phone, I kept my eyes peeled for any unusual shapes in the water or signs of tracks in the landscape. During my flights, I found a few promising signs. I spotted a number of tracks leading off the main river and cutting through the vegetation. I also found what looked like footprints leading off a small creek and disappearing into a dense patch of vegetation. Yet despite my best efforts, the bulky mega herbivores continued to elude my efforts. Continuing our journey upriver, we finally arrived at the edge of the River Gambie National Park. It was instantly obvious we had entered an utterly wild and protected place. Gallery forests erupted along the banks around us. Trees towered tall, and the diversity of different species produced a dynamic landscape. I was struck with a feeling of awe. Advancing further towards Bird Island, our anchor spot for the night, we passed a bulbous island in the middle of the river. Curious to get a closer look, we veered near its edge when out of the green appeared a giant hole in the vegetation, the width and height of a large car. It burrowed deep into the undergrowth and was perfectly circular in shape. I couldn't believe it. It was a hippo highway. As we continued to follow the edge, more and more holes appeared. I felt as though we had arrived on King Kong's Skull Island and imagined encountering one of these giants unexpectedly exiting one of the highways as we passed. On contemplating that idea further, we then decided to give the edge a wider berth, but continued to follow just in case. Arriving at the end of the island, we anchored for the evening and started to tidy deck when a strange sound, much like a whale blow, sounded close to the boat. Wondering if we had both imagined it, Alexei and I both stood still, waiting to see if we heard it again. There it was. Whipping our heads around, we spotted the unmistakable head of a hippo partially submerged in the shallows, just 50 meters from the boat. Although it was now evening, I could tell it was looking straight at us and could hear it smelling the air as it contemplated what to do. Spooked, it launched itself underwater and disappeared as if it had never existed. I was speechless. We had found the hippos! Little did I know that this would just be one of a whole series of unbelievable encounters with these animals throughout our trip. But even if I had known that at the time, it wouldn't have made this moment any less special. That night we went to sleep with the bellowing honks of hippos in the distance. And at first light, I flew my drone in the hopes of catching a glimpse of one returning to the water after a night on land feeding. After a few days observing the hippos around Bird Island, I worked out that peak times of activity seemed to be around 10 a.m. and sunset. Having not managed to catch them on film yet, I was hopeful that by knowing their habits better, I might have better luck. To my surprise, I learned quite quickly that they were very shy of humans. At the sight of a boat, they would instantly dive below water. Not the ferocious nature of the most dangerous animal in Africa that you might imagine. Later in our passage up the river, I would meet a local ranger who explained why they are so afraid of humans. Under the rule of the former president, hippos were shot and slaughtered in their dozens by men in helicopters from the Mali army. Killed for no reason other than for human greed, the president wanted people to have to pay to visit hippos at his privately owned zoo, instead of being able to see them in the wild. Thankfully, a percentage of Gambia's hippos survived this massacre, but their trust in humans is understandably shaken. My lucky break came on the third day. It was 10 a.m, right on time for hippos making their way to their daytime wallows. I spotted one off the back of the boat. It was roughly 50 meters away and rounding the back of a small islet. Quickly flying my drone, I shot up into the air to get a wider view. Three hippos were in the shallows, just on the other side of the small islet where we were anchored. Slowly descending and zooming in, an incredible scene unfolded. Two giant heads faced one another. Just meters apart, they bobbed above and below the water in a strange but beautiful ballet. As one surfaced, the other would dive. And so this dance continued. I could see one was much bigger than the other, a male by the size of it. The other appeared to be a female and was noticeably smaller. At first, the interaction seemed kind of playful, but when a small head of a baby hippo appeared at the side of the female, I realized that this was a much more tense situation than what it first appeared to be. Backed against the bank, the female and baby were caught in a corner. The female raised her backside and began dung showering, whipping her stumpy tail back and forth, covering the male in her dung and urine. A well-known territorial display, this was clearly the female saying, "Back off." Unfazed, the male tried to inch forwards towards her. She launched herself at him in a defensive show. That sparked a response. The male opened his enormous jaws in an aggressive yawn, revealing his sharp, gnarled teeth, and let out a series of bellowing honks. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up. Courageously, the female stood her ground. For the next 20 minutes, she faced off the male as he continued to corner both her and her young. Then, realizing defeat, the male gave up and dived away, leaving the female and her infant alone in the shallows. For a few moments, they looked around watchfully, looking out for any sign he might come back. Then, satisfied he had gone, they dived in unison, disappearing into the endless chocolate milk waters of the river around. The next morning before leaving, we decided to head out for a kayak around the islets. Satisfied with having caught some incredible footage with my drone, I now wanted to see if I could photograph the hippos up close with my long lens. Although spooked by larger boats, the hippos seemed to be indifferent to the fishermen on their pirogues. Keen to try and get a closer view, we thought kayaking might give us a better chance. Jumping in Mango, our bright yellow inflatable kayak, we headed around the back of the island and began paddling up its edge. Before long, we noticed two hippos wallowing in the shallows just 200 metres ahead of us on the opposite bank. Inching closer, I was excited to see them with my own eyes. They were beautifully bulky and barrel-shaped. Now within 100 metres, we decided that was a safe distance to stay at, and rafting with a bush on the bank, I began to snap photos. No sooner had I started than the hippos began to move. I saw a fishing pirogue was coming the other way. The hippos moved peacefully into the middle of the river and sunk below the surface. We decided to sit still and wait. Two large blows sounded. The hippos were heading our way and getting much, much closer. This was the part where my heart rate started to rise. Both disappeared beneath the surface again, bubble trails giving away their location as they advanced towards us. Frozen between fear and excitement, we stayed completely still and waited. Then, just to the side of us, a colossal head rose from the water like a submarine breaking the surface, just 30 meters from our kayak. Locking eyes with the hippo, I could see every detail of its face. The bristle-like hair around its mouth, the pinky discoloration of skin around its eyes. It rose high out of the water and faced us with an intimidating stare, before sinking below the water again. This was clearly our cue to go. Bracing for the hippo to possibly charge, we whipped Mango around and paddled swiftly in the opposite direction. With each stroke, I waited to hear the dreaded sound of the hippo surfacing close to the kayak. But when I gained some courage to look back, I could see they weren't following us and had remained where they were, leaving us to retreat unharmed. On reflection, this display had clearly been a polite way to tell us to move. And as far as hippo interactions go, I was pretty happy with that. Boarding Feral, we both laughed in disbelief at what we had just experienced. Cranking the engine, we lifted anchor and said farewell to Bird Island and headed towards Janjanbure. On arriving in the old capital, we felt like two fish out of water. Having been off-grid for 2 weeks, it was an offence on the senses wandering back into a busy town. Stopping only to resupply, we stocked up quickly on fresh veggies from the ladies at the local market and quickly bought some fuel. From the few accounts of the handful of sailors who have ventured this far upriver, we'd been told that this was the furthest point you could go. Blocked by a power line that stretches over the river, sailboats had been unable to sail under it as their masts are too high. But with Feral's shallow draft and short mast, we were hopeful we might pass. Seeing it was now clearly a little bit more tricky than I anticipated. With no formal height given for the cable, we began our guesstimations once again. We watched the ferry pass backwards and forwards between each bank. Comparing its height to Feral, there wasn't much difference, so we guessed we should just about fit. Heading as close to the edge of the river as possible, we lined Feral up to pass under what looked to be the highest point. I couldn't watch. Leaving Alexi to drive us under, I braced for impact and imagined the headlines. British sailboat collides with African power line, leaving thousands without electricity. Not what I wanted, nor hoped we would be remembered for in Gambia. Moments later, Alexei cheered, "We've passed!" I thanked the sailing spirits and the other forces above. We were now entering uncharted territory and heading towards places few other sailboats had been before. It felt like the start of a whole new adventure, even though we were on one. As we cruised forward, I saw wild forests lining the banks ahead. And I wondered, what treasures lie ahead for us yet?
That's it for this week. Don't forget to hit the follow button wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you want to see more of the adventure, you can find me on Instagram. Just follow the link in the description below. And until next time, fair winds and smooth sailing.